Hi, my name is Stuart Weems and welcome to the Investopoly podcast. My goal is to share easy to understand evidence-based holistic insights to help you master the game of building wealth. And in today's episode, I'd like to share with you my property market outlook for 2024. Always interesting to think about what are the factors that might influence property growth over the year ahead. And if there's a number of different factors at play, most of them pretty unique to this year, in fact. But of course, it's a bit of a reminder also that long-term outlooks are far more important to investors because they better align with the investment horizon. That is, if we're property investors, we're investing for hopefully many decades rather than just 2024. And therefore, it's better to consider what will property growth be over multiple decades rather than the next 12 months. Having said that, it is kind of interesting to think about how markets will behave, and particularly for people that are either looking at selling or buying, short-term implications or short-term market movements are actually kind of important to consider. So I think the primary factor this year that will probably influence all investment markets is expectations around inflation, because then that helps inform us around expectations around interest rates. And really, there's uncertainty around whether inflation has, in fact, got under control and will eventually make its way down to more comfortable levels. In Australia, that's between 2 and 3% for the RBA. Or will it be sticky? And therefore, will interest rates will have to remain at these levels for longer than expected? Or worse still, will inflation rear its ugly head again and maybe force central banks to continue to raise interest rates? That's the factor that markets are grappling with and have been grappling with over the last 12 months. And I think we'll continue to grapple with over probably at least the first half of 2024 and maybe even the whole year. The reality is that goods inflation, not services, has really normalized back to pre-COVID levels. So obviously there was a massive surge of people buying a lot of goods during lockdown, during COVID, and that's sort of normalized. But services inflation is our problem, and wage inflation could continue to fuel services inflation. It's a bit of a spiral. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens this year, what will happen with inflation. Will it gradually reduce? And therefore, as I said, that'll help us inform us about what interest rates will do. If you look to money markets are pricing in 2 interest rate cuts here in Australia in the second half of this year, so steady for the next 6 months. The other factor to really think about is the Stage 3 tax cuts, which kick in on 1 July. And anyone earning more than $200,000 will get about a $9,000 tax cut, which is pretty significant, and projected to inject about $20 to $24 billion into the economy, which is roughly around 1% of GDP. Doesn't sound like a lot, but it is a lot. And it will probably stimulate discretionary spending again, and that's inflationary, so that's an issue as well. In fact, ANZ Economics last week estimated the economic impact of these tax cuts is equivalent to 2 25-point interest rate cuts. So it's possible that the RBA sees inflation moving in the right direction, but they will be cautious around 1 July and a little bit thereafter to really measure the impact of these tax cuts. And in fact, what it might mean is we might get the tax cuts this year, but no interest rate cuts this year. I think, you know, if you're a borrower, I think the best assumption is to assume that interest rates won't change this year. Of course, we might be surprised on the upside. The second theme for this year, I think, is that discretionary vendors won't be very active in the market. And that's really because there'll be fewer buyers, so there won't be as much buying demand. A discretionary vendor is really a property owner that wants to sell but is really under no time or financial constraints to do so. So most vendors in the market are discretionary vendors. You know, there's some people that have to sell either because financially doesn't make up a large part of the market or because of circumstances, but most vendors are discretionary vendors. And I was interested to read the CBA's Home Buying Index, which is a gauge to measure home purchasing intent, so whether people intend to buy. And that index has actually declined by two-thirds from its peak. So it peaked out, the index peaked at about 170 in 2021, 2022. The index is now close to 60, so massive decline. The index began at the beginning of 2019, so pre-COVID at 100. So it's still 40% below than pre-COVID levels. And essentially what that means is that not many people are planning on buying property in 2024. And I think that's for obvious purposes, you know, affordability, interest rates, uncertainty around inflation, all those sorts of things that I've previously mentioned is going to reduce sentiment, buyer sentiment. And as a result, a discretionary vendor is going to look at that and go, well, there's not a lot of demand around at the moment. I think I'll wait until next year to sell. Now, that would be good for prices because it means that supply is lower and it will meet that lower level of demand and probably underpin prices. The challenge is then those people that are looking to buy property, you know, there'll be less to choose from. So to find a really good quality asset could be challenging. Another theme to think about this year is the impact of rising rents. So it's been well documented that rents rose strongly last year, around about 10%, you know, on a national sort of level. And there's certainly no signs of those rent rises slowing down. Although we've got to look at longer term growth rates. And really over the last 15 years, rent growth has been below long-term average. So we're kind of making up for lost time, although that's not always cited in the media. But I think the persistent shortage of rental properties will continue to see rents rise. Now, we might not see double-digit growth this year, but I think we'll see high single-digit growth. So I think rents will continue to rise. So what is the impact of that? Well, the impact is that the cost of renting property is becoming more and more expensive. And therefore, it starts to balance between, well, maybe I'm actually better off owning property rather than renting it. Now, I don't think we've reached that tipping point yet, but especially if interest rates start to come down, whether that's this year or next, it'll start to become more and more attractive for people to buy if they financially in a situation where they can, as opposed to renting. And I believe that will mostly be centered in demand for apartments because first home buyers tend to, you know, have a lower borrowing capacity and therefore a lower sort of budget to work with. And also if you look at the relative value of apartments, so the median apartment price versus the median house price, since 1980, they're at all-time highs in most capital cities and particularly in Sydney. Sydney, the a median house price is almost twice as much as a median apartment price, where it should be around about 1.4. And in Melbourne and Brisbane, it's about 1.6, and it should be sort of closer to 1.2. So relative to houses, apartments are cheap at the moment. And of course, we know mean reversion will kick in eventually. And I think these rising rents will precipitate a resurgence in demand for apartments, and particularly older style apartments, as they tend to be a lot more livable than, say, apartments that were built, say, 10 years ago and have worn and torn very poorly. Worn and torn? I'm not even sure that's a saying. Anyhow, the next thing I'd like to talk about is borrowing capacity challenges. You know, borrowing capacity is a very important consideration when thinking about property price growth, because when borrowing capacity is abundant, more money flows into the property market and that stimulates demand from buyers. When borrowing capacity is very tight, then means fewer people can borrow and that restricts the amount of money that flows into the property market. At the moment, borrowing capacity is very tight and investment loans are tested using a benchmark interest rate of around about 10%. That means to go and borrow $1 million for investment purposes, property investors that need to demonstrate that they can afford annual repayments of about $109,000, which is, you know, a considerable amount of money. That's really $1 million at 10% repaid over 25 years. And so that really, this stringent requirement really locks out lower income earners and doesn't tend to worry higher income earners, of course. And unfortunately, that just widens wealth inequality. But when you have a look at loan volume statistics in 2023, owner-occupied lending increased by 10%, which isn't too bad. Investment lending increased by 27%, albeit off a really relatively low base. So we can't read too much into that scenario. However, when the regulators think about should they relax borrowing capacity and credit criteria, they're going to look at those volumes and go, well, there's no reason to relax that criteria because people are still borrowing. Again, the sad part of it is that the lower income earners are kind of locked out of the borrowing market in that situation, but I just can't see any major changes in borrowing capacity rules, you know, credit policy and so forth this year, unless those volumes start to really decline. Which is a good segue into my next point, which is the fixed interest rate cliff that this time last year, all the papers were talking about the multitude of Australians that were coming off very low fixed interest rates, you know, around 2-ish percent, rolling over onto much higher variable rates, 5 or 6% back 12 months ago. And a lot of commentators thought, well, what impact is that going to have? It's going to cause a lot of financial stress. Maybe people will have to sell. If there's a lot of forced sales, what will happen to property prices? And I wrote a blog on 1 March 2023, so around when this was happening, I said it's all nonsense. And really, it's turned out to be all nonsense, this fixed interest rate cliff. And the reason for that is that most commentators have never written a loan. They don't do much in the way of mortgage lending. And so they don't understand that credit criteria has been tight for many, many years. And so whilst people were borrowing when interest rates are 2%, very few borrowers were borrowing amounts that were unaffordable over the long run. And of course, we have that insight in our business that commentators didn't. And that was, there's a few other factors there, but that was the main factor that kind of influenced me to say, no, you know what, it's fine. The people that were doing the borrowing additional funds during COVID tended to be higher income earners because they preserved their employment during the lockdowns. And so higher income earners tend to be a little bit more conservative around borrowing capacity and so forth. And I didn't think it was going to impact the market. So I think it's a good lesson for us to not listen to necessarily too much commentary, especially from people that don't have practical experience in the field that they're forecasting. So therefore, all up, I don't think we're going to see a huge amount of growth in property markets in 2023. You know, I think Melbourne will still continue to underperform, mainly because, well, no one can be really certain why the underperformance exists, but my best guess is concern around the state government, both in terms of its behaviour, its propensity to turn around and introduce new legislation without too much consultation or even consideration. And secondly, the concern around Victoria's debt levels and what that might mean for taxes in Victoria. I guess they're the only two things that I can think about that might be dissuading investors in that market. Of course, over the COVID lockdown periods, we had a lot of people leave Victoria, but that sort of turned around now. It could be a lag effect. I'm not really sure. In any case, I can't necessarily see that trend turning around very much. I think Perth will be, again, the standout market like it was in 2023. But I just don't think the growth rates are going to be as buoyant as we experienced during 2023. So certainly in the single digits. But I think it's interesting to ask ourselves what could happen for growth to really kick off. And I think there's two scenarios here. The first one is that the RBA starts to cut interest rates much earlier than what we expect. And they might do that if they're concerned that they push rates too high and they want to avoid pushing the economy into a recession. And in that case, it could be a really good signal to property investors that borrowing costs are on the decline, and that might entice more investors into the market. The second scenario could be a relaxation of the borrowing rules by either the banks or the banking regulator. And that could be things like reducing the benchmark interest rate, eliminating the interest rate premiums that banks charge investors over and above owner-occupiers, maybe relaxing some policies around interest-only or interest-only terms in terms of extending them. So maybe playing around the fringes there that will increase demand for investment lending. So if any of those two things happen, rate cuts or relaxation of credit policies, I think we could perhaps then see greater growth than expected. Now, as I said at the beginning, short-term forecasts are kind of interesting, you know, interesting to consider, make for good conversation at the dinner table, of course, but really don't help us as long-term investors. We really need to be thinking about forecasts over many decades, as I said at the beginning. And really, when we look at the fundamentals in Australia for the property market, they're very robust. You know, we've got a very robust economy. We've got a positive sort of employment situation, good population growth. In fact, I recorded an episode last year predicting that Melbourne's median house price would exceed $2 million by 2032. And that's really just extrapolating out some long-term growth and some mean reversion and so forth. So that's really seeing their median house price double over the next 10 years. And I think that's true for most markets in Australia. I think the signs, the fundamental signs are very strong. What might happen this year is neither here nor there for long-term investors. It's really about focusing on those longer-term outcomes. The thing to note, though, in a market like what I expect to occur this year is it is a good market to buy and sell in, particularly to buy. You know, a stable and balanced market it's much easier to determine a property's intrinsic value because prices are more stable. They're not moving all over the place. Additionally, there's less buyer demands, less buyers to compete with. So if you're looking to get into the market, 2024 is a pretty good market to do that in just because it is easier to operate in that market. You certainly, the risk of overpaying is greatly reduced. Your only problem will be supply. You know, will there be a good quality asset out there for you to put your money into? That's really the only question. As always, check out the links in the show notes, including a discount code for buying any of my books if they're of interest. And until next week, bye for now.